Okay, well, we're here in Studio B at WGXC 90.7 FM, and we're pre-recording on May 7th with New York State Assemblyman Steve McLaughlin, who has been a guest on this show a few times. Welcome to the Right Opinion Show, Steve.
Thanks. Glad to be back.
All right. Well, Steve, I want to start off talking about the New York State budget, if you don't mind.
Sure.
And you probably know there's been quite a buzz, especially in the conservative wing of the Republican Party, I would say, about the fact that the SAFE Act funding was apparently buried somewhere in the budget bill, so that it didn't actually show as a line item, I guess you would call it. And therefore, I mean, I don't know the exact numbers, but it seems that most Republicans voted for the budget knowing that SAFE Act funding was in there. And it seems to a lot of people that it might have been, you know, a deal worked out between the Democrats and the Republicans. You know, hey, we're aware that it's not politically a great idea for you to sign off on a budget that has SAFE Act funding, so we're just going to conceal it in a way that makes it easy for you to go along with. I mean, what's your take on that whole?
There's a couple of things. The one thing is that the people listening should know that I think there are many, many people in New York that think we vote on the budget, meaning one vote. We vote yes or no, and that's the budget. In reality, it's multiple different bills. 11 that yes. make up the New York State budget. They're all budget bills, but they mm-hmm. are compiled, and that becomes the budget. So it's 11 votes. I've never voted all yes or all no on any budget since I've been in office, and this was the same case. So what I did is I knew where the SAFE Act funding was buried and hidden because I was the one last year in debate that debated Denny Farrell, who is the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, and that's all out there on YouTube. That was last year's debate where I pointed out and discovered and uncovered where that SAFE Act funding was. Now, I think in a disingenuous way, it is not line-itemed in the budget. It is buried within an IT section of the budget, information technology. It is buried within state police operations. It's buried in a few areas. But I knew where it was in two budget bills, because that's where it resides, in two different budget bills. And I voted no on those two bills, just as I did last year. So I don't know whether there was a deal cut. And I'm not so sure that there was, quite frankly. I think that nobody really wants to have it as a line item, but was there a deal or not? I can't say. I have absolutely no way of knowing that. I just know that the money was there. And once again, I pointed it out in debate this year, just like I did last year. Now, it becomes very difficult to say exactly how much and where it is, although we did do a pretty good job of drilling down on those numbers. But it would be a lot better if it was a line item that people could then clearly see.
But did you, in all honesty, and you deserve credit for wanting to know where it is, because it's one thing about... It's one thing to talk a good game, and it's another thing to actually try and do away with the SAFE Act. You obviously found out where it was. Other legislators could have inquired, and
yeah.
right?
Yeah, well...
So, I mean, is there... Do you have a sense that there isn't really a willingness to do battle in regard to the SAFE Act, that they're sort of just letting it happen at this point?
You know, I guess I can't speak for every other legislator in there.
Right.
I think had they listened to my debate last year, mm-hmm. and most of us were there last year, there's certainly some new folks that came in. But one of the other members had said to me, in fact, Bill Nojay, who is a radio show host as well out in the middle part of the state.
Yeah, I've heard of him.
Bill Nojay said that was the most informative debate of the entire session, was mm-hmm. my debate with Denny Farrell. So if anybody had been paying attention last year, they knew that the money was there,
right.
And they knew it was in the exact same spot this year. So it clearly was there. Is there a willingness to fight? I think what it is with some folks, because keep in mind that, for example, the state operations bill as part of the budget is an extremely big bill, and there are a lot of things in there that I agreed with as a legislator that I would want to mm-hmm. have passed. But on principle, I'm absolutely not going to ever fund the SAFE Act because I view the SAFE Act as the worst piece of legislation I've ever laid eyes on. So just as a matter of principle, I will never vote to give any funding to that. Now, I have heard quite a few of our senators saying that, oh, no, that's not true. There was no money in there. In fact, we took money away. Well, I know it's true because I had the debate 2 years in a row.
Well, how can it not be true?
Right.
I mean, the governor says there is a SAFE Act. There has to be money.
There has to be money, right. So you can't say that, no, there was no funding for the SAFE Act in there. And then we've had folks say that, in fact, the Senate removed $7 million. Well, I would ask the question, if I can't point out a line item where the money is, how can you point out a line item where the money absolutely is not?
Good point.
You know, you're just simply saying we took away $7 million. Well, prove it, because I know that the money's there,
mm-hmm.
And I've proven it 2 years in a row now. By the way, I'm directly debating the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, so he knows where the money is, I know where the money is, and anybody listening to that debate now knows where that money is as well.
Is that going to end up on YouTube, I hope?
It already is.
It already is?
It already is, yeah.
Oh.
Last year's debate and this year's debate are already up there.
I have to check that out.
Yep.
Well, okay, so let's talk about the budget in more general terms. And you said there were actually 11 bills.
Right.
So what did you vote for all 11 or
no?
Which
yeah, and I should have brought them all with me. They're actually sitting on my desk.
Well, what did you vote against?
Oh God, the state operations bill I voted against. I definitely voted against the education bill. And folks would listen and would say, well, how could he vote against education? I was voting against a horrendously bad education bill that penalizes teachers, overtests our students. I think any teacher out there would applaud me for voting no, as would the parents. We had a six-hour debate on the education bill alone. That's how important that piece was to many of us. So we spent a lot of time on education. And no, I think, was clearly the right vote. And if you looked at the number of students that opted out or refused the test shortly after we had that budget vote, I think my vote was the right one. So and pretty
well, what,
much.
What would the education bill have had to look like for you to vote for it?
Well, it would have had to clearly address what we're going to do with teacher evaluations, which this governor does not. Mm-hmm. This budget bill does not. This will now be the third iteration of a teacher evaluation plan,
mm-hmm.
Because the first time this governor did it, he jammed it through on a message of necessity in the middle of the night. I railed against it then. That was probably 3 or 4 years ago now. I said that it wasn't going to work, and lo and behold, it didn't work, and now we've gone back at it a second time and now a third time. So what this bill did is it abdicated responsibility from the legislature and the governor and placed it all on state ed, but there is nothing in that bill preventing state education department from using 50% of a teacher's evaluation being based on a test score. In fact, mm-hmm. they could go higher than that. There's absolutely nothing holding them back. So it was a really poorly written bill. It was just not good. And there was a clear reasons for voting no on that bill.
Where does the teachers union, or at least members of the teachers union in your assembly district, do they support you on your decision to vote?
Yeah, I would say clearly they mm-hmm. do. They're thrilled with the amount of effort and vigor and fight that I put in mm-hmm. to protecting our students and our teachers, too. I don't understand the logic of a governor attacking public education the way this governor is. It doesn't make any sense. And it's not just because I'm married to a teacher. That doesn't have anything to do with it, really. I'm looking at teachers that I talk to all the time, and we certainly have a lot of teachers here in New York State and a lot in my district, of course, and overwhelmingly they're dedicated people that love kids, love what they do, and they're just being beaten down by this governor. So I think that the teachers union, who, by the way, has never one time endorsed me for mm-hmm. election, not one time.
Right.
I wish they would, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think I've earned their endorsement.
Mm-hmm.
They've never endorsed me. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to go out and fight for them and fight for the kids, because what we're doing to these kids with this Common Core over-testing of our kids does not make any sense. And ultimately, I'm going to be proven right on that as well. And,
yeah.
And I just hope it happens sooner rather
than
later.
Well, there seems to be an ever-increasing number of people that are not, you know, don't have allegiance to a major party. They're more willing than ever to consider other options. So hopefully they'll catch on to what you're trying to do. Is there any one of those 11 bills that you really like?
Off the top of my head, there was a few. You know, it's hard because there's been so much gone on there in Albany since the budget. But, yeah, there was – I think if I remember correctly, I think I voted yes on 6 and no on 5 or yes on 7 and no on 4, something like that. So I was yes on a few. There's – when we're doing the budget, as an elected – let's say a politician. As a politician, you can vote yes or you can vote no, and it's easily justifiable either way. And in most cases, because you can say, well, there was, I liked this, 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 and this, but I didn't like these things. Therefore, it was good enough to vote yes. It's never a situation where you go, this bill is absolutely perfect and I love everything about
right.
it. You pick your poison as you're
right.
going through these bills
yeah.
and
I
you
mean,
try
I,
and do the best you can.
Right. I can see the need to be, you know, a little flexible. Nobody gets everything they want.
Right.
I also feel that there are some issues that you should not compromise on.
Right.
And...
For example,
frankly, you seem to be that type of person that that feels that way also.
Right.
Are you asking me for example?
No, I was saying, for example, the education bill, there's no way
right.
I was voting for
right.
that. Even though, by the way, what they did is they inappropriately, I think, buried so-called ethics reform, and I would say, how's that
yes,
working out?
Tied to education.
Tied to education. What does that have to do with the education of our students? Well, the reason they did that is because those of us that turn around and vote yes, next time we're running for re-election, or those of us that vote no, excuse me, those of us that know on that, next time we're running for re-election, they can say, so-and-so voted no on ethics reform. Well, that's nonsense. Ethics reform never should have been in the education bill to begin with, and I wasn't going to vote yes on what was a really weak, anemic package of ethics reform that, by the way, will never work because if unethical people are in office, they don't care what the rules are.
And, yeah, that's a perfect segue, by the way, into the next part of
all
this
right.
conversation because recently in the news, and by recently I mean like in the last few days, Dean Skelos, who is the New York State Senate Majority Leader, was arrested along with his son, and of course, prior to that, it was Speaker of the House
Silver,
yep. arrested, and then of course we've had the issue of Governor Cuomo trying to shut down the Moreland Commission, getting too close to home, in regard to his own affairs. I mean, I know Senator Marchione called for Dean Skelos to step down. Where are you on that?
I was the first one.
You did that also.
I was out last Friday, so we're recording this on Friday. A week ago today, I was the first public official at state level to make that statement.
Yeah.
And the reason I did is on Friday, Senator Skelos had not yet been arrested, but we knew it was coming and had some pretty good information that it was going to happen this week. Well, it happened Monday of this week. So last Friday, I came out with a statement, said if, and it certainly appears very likely, if the senator is arrested, then he needs to step down as majority leader of the Senate. So I was the first one out of the blocks, just like I was very, very quick out of the gate with Sheldon Silver when
yeah.
he was arrested. Because
and this is even though, by the way, you agree that he's innocent until proven guilty.
100%.
But it's a big distraction.
It is.
And there's probably a little smoke where there's fire.
Well, there could be. Now, on a personal level, I like Senator Skelos. I've had nothing but a cordial relationship with the senator. And I hope that all of this, you know, he's found innocent. I truly hope that. But that being said, it isn't about Republican or Democrat. This is when these charges, and they are very serious charges, and anybody that's read the complaint would understand that they're serious charges, that is such a distraction to the body, to the legislature, that there's no way the legislature can conduct business when the leader of one of the houses is under this much pressure. And also, for his sake, he needs to be able to mount a vigorous defense, because in essence, he's fighting for his life, because if these charges stand and you know, if God forbid something happens that he's convicted, he's going to be going to prison for a really long time, as will Sheldon Silver, by the way.
Right. So. And just as an aside, in all fairness, we had an individual named Joe Bruno, who went through hell, and he's an elderly man. And I mean, there were all kinds of charges against him, and it turned out that he was acquitted.
Twice. He was exonerated twice.
And I might add, at a huge expense to the taxpayer. I believe they owe him a lot of money
they
now.
They do, yep.
And I'm just bringing that up to stress the fact that sometimes it's not always the way it seems on the surface. But there's no doubt that there's corruption in the New York State Legislature. And in fact, there's another, I think he's an assemblyman on Long Island. Just a couple of days ago, that was also arrested. He was sentenced.
Yesterday, he had already been arrested. William Scarborough, I think
William Scarborough.
Another nice guy, quite frankly, by the way. I mean, you talk to Assemblyman Scarborough, he's a nice guy, but the fact is he was stealing money from the people of New York. I have no sympathy for that.
No,
I've been the anti-corruption legislator since I got there.
I don't get it. Is there something about the structure of the legislature that just makes it so enticing to play games that it's hard for people to avoid, or maybe they feel that it's okay. Like, maybe they feel they have a right to do this for some bizarre reason. I mean, what's going on?
Yeah, well, there are many, I think, many reasons that contribute to this culture of corruption. And if the fan tipped over.
Yeah, that was a fan falling down in the studio. Neither one of us has had a heart attack, folks. So don't worry.
There are many things that lead to this culture of corruption. And why, you go way back to the Tammany Hall days, and this is almost like Tammany Hall up here in upstate New York now in the Capitol. Overwhelmingly, but not exclusively, overwhelmingly the problems are emanating out of New York City. And the folks that they send up here to operate in Albany. Now, a lot of people that are in politics do not want to be in the New York State Senate or the Assembly. They would much prefer to be on the New York City Council. They make more money. They get public pork to spend. They're home every night. So a lot of times, I'm going to be honest, a lot of times I don't think they're sending their best and brightest to Albany.
Yeah, well, that's another point. Do you think there is some underlying issue of legislators, New York legislators, feeling that they're underpaid to the point where they have a right to do these crazy things?
That was actually what William Scarborough said, that he was angry because there hasn't been a raise in years and years, which is, again, no excuse for corruption at all.
I just banged my head against the microphone, folks.
There's obviously no excuse for corruption. There's no excuse for, I don't care if you haven't gotten a raise in 14 years, too bad. Don't run for office if you don't like what the pay is, because all of us run knowing what the pay is going to be.
Right.
So, and I would contend, people have said, well, you guys should be full-time and we should pay you $125,000 or $150,000. I think that's exactly wrong.
Yeah.
That's not what the founders intended for this country.
I mean, I'll tell you this, and I don't want to get you worked up about this. I don't actually agree with it, but like I was a federal civil servant, and I mean I had a fairly high grade, but I will tell you that I got paid more than the New York State Assemblyman.
Oh, this absolutely.
I didn't manage a large department or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I do think that New York State legislators probably should earn more money than they do, only because it's been 14 years. These are people, family men. They need to support their family, send their kids to college.
Right.
And but no, I don't think that earning too little should be an excuse for criminal behavior.
I've said tongue in cheek many times. I tell you what, give us $1,000 a year raise for every year that somebody doesn't get indicted or arrested.
Mm-hmm.
But every time someone does, we have to give back $1,000. And the way it's going, we'll be working for free in about two decades. It's ridiculous. There's, you know, whether I was making $50,000 or $150,000, I'm not going to be corrupt because that's who I am.
Right.
And the same holds true for those that are corrupt. If they're corrupt, that $150,000 isn't going to be enough for them anyway.
Right.
But I think the problem, the biggest systemic problem we have is this, the culture is such that it becomes, oh, that's just the way things are done around here. It's a pay-to-play type of a legislature.
But is there a bill that can be introduced? Is there a process that can be put in place which takes the enticement away, that just makes it more difficult to go in that direction and do these things?
Well, there's no magic bullet, but there are a few things that would help. One of the things that I've pushed and stressed over and over again is the very simple accounting practice of requiring receipts before reimbursing a legislator. And anybody listening out here that's on an expense account is shaking their head going, absolutely, that's what I have to do. I turn in my receipts, I get reimbursed. William Scarborough would not be headed to prison for a year if receipts were required. We're putting people on the honor system in the legislature that clearly haven't earned that right. So that's one thing, but they simply refuse to do it. And I've had pushback from people saying, oh, that's too much of a headache. Well, why is it too much? Who are legislators that we're all that special that we don't have to require receipts? Any state employee has to get receipts
right.
in order to get reimbursed.
Right.
We are, in essence, state employees.
Mm-hmm.
That's step one, and it's a simple one. I'm not saying it solves all the problems, but it's a simple example of how off track we are. The other thing is full disclosure of every single contribution that you receive. We just have a governor right now. He just claimed yesterday that his single biggest donor, which is Glenwood Management, which is tied directly into Silver and Skelos and Cuomo, Glenwood Management is Andrew Cuomo's single biggest donor. They've given him $1.45 million. We had a governor that claims he doesn't know them and never met with them. And that is a flat-out lie. He absolutely met with them over and over again. But yet, he claims he didn't know them, he didn't meet with them. So what we need is full disclosure. I would love to see the LLC loophole closed, because Glenwood Management has 19 LLCs that they funnel money to politicians through. And that happens over and over throughout New York State. And really, but at the end of the day, what it ultimately comes down to is the public paying attention to who they're sending to office.
Yeah, and I will tell you, all government bureaucracies have opportunities for stuff like this. This is not, we're talking about the New York State Legislature here, but I don't want to give the impression that this is the only governmental body that has these issues. And I'm just thinking now, in fact, that when I worked for HUD, one of my coworkers discovered a $500,000 error in a Section 8 payout to a owner of a Section 8 project, a large project. It was supposed to be a $50,000 payout, and it was or whatever, but it was $500,000 more than he was supposed to get. So he calls the guy up and he tells him, hey, you know, we gave you $500,000 too much. And the guy says, oh yeah, you know, I noticed that. And my friend says, well, that happened like 3 weeks ago. He says, I haven't heard from you. Yeah, well, you know, I was going to get in touch to ask you what I should do. He says, well, what do you mean what you should do? You should give the money back. So the guy says to him, listen, Tom, who knows about this other than you and I?
Wow.
So Tom's going, I just discovered it, so it's just you and I right now. So the guy says to him, I'll give you $5,000 if you just forget about it. So he agrees to it, gets the FBI involved.
Right.
They wire them all up and everything. They get to a parking lot. This guy's giving him an envelope with $5,000 in him. And he gets arrested. So my friend says to him, you're under arrest, MF. And then as he's being cuffed, he says to the guy, let me get this straight. You offered me $5,000 for $500,000?
Right, exactly.
Crazy?
Oh, my gosh.
But all these things happen in your government, folks.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is.
And it happens in other states, too. But clearly, it's happening in New York far too often. I mean, yeah. Politico just said yesterday, congratulations, New York. You're number one in corruption. And
oh,
when
my.
Illinois and Chicago are looking at you, and New Orleans and other states are looking at you saying, wow, you guys are really corrupt. That's not the type of government that the people of New York want or deserve.
No. So. And Andrew Cuomo is in charge of this government here in New York. It doesn't seem like he's going anywhere anytime soon.
Stay tuned.
I think predictions that he wants to throw his hat into the 2016 thing are just totally erroneous. There's no way, in my opinion, he would upset Hillary Clinton. He's part of that crowd. But maybe U.S. Attorney General or something along those lines is on his mind. But I know you're not a big fan of his, mm-hmm. and you're one of the most outspoken assemblymen trying to bring his corruption to the attention of the public. Where are we with that right now? What's the latest that's been happening with Governor Cuomo, in your opinion?
Well, I think that he is kind of accelerating the decline of not only his office, but certainly the state of New York. And you look at some of the comments that he's been saying lately, they're nonsense. I mean, flat out lying about not knowing his biggest donor. Yesterday, we find out that state bond work to the tune of about $100 million was funneled to J.P. Morgan and Chase and Citibank after they gave Andrew Cuomo about $130,000 in campaign contributions. That's a direct violation of federal law. Talk about putting it on the tee for the U.S. attorney and saying, go ahead and hit me. That one begs to be investigated.
And where's the Moreland Commission on this?
Well, I mean, you look what he did there. That may be the thing that completely unravels his administration, is him shutting down his own, by his own admission. He said, it's mine. I can do whatever I want with it. It's all mine.
Mm-hmm.
He starts an anti-corruption commission, and one of two things happened, or both at the same time. Either they were getting too close to him personally, or they had dug up enough dirt on Silver and Skelos and some others that he could use that as leverage to hang over their heads, or both of those occurred. But the fact is, the undeniable fact is, he shut down his own anti-corruption commission, and he did it claiming that he got quote-unquote ethics reform. Every year or so, we get ethics reform out of Andrew Cuomo, but it never seems to work because he never does the real ethics reform that's needed.
Mm.
So what he really did, and I said this way early on when he shut that down, I said, look, I'm not an attorney, but all of those Moreland Commission members were deputized as deputy AGs. They were deputy attorney generals. When he interfered with them, and he absolutely clearly did, that to me is obstruction of justice, or apparently obstruction of justice, and that is a lot of what the U.S. attorney is investigating right now.
I mean, my recollection is that Richard Nixon never suggested shutting down the Watergate Commission.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well,
maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe.
And on top of that, he's deleting emails after 90 days. So, that to me also smacks of impropriety, if not outright illegality. I mean, how are we supposed to have a record of an administration for historical purposes if emails are being routinely deleted after 90 days?
He must be taking advice from Hillary Clinton
yeah,
on
exactly.
that kind of thing. 40,000 emails, big deal.
Yeah.
She's just corresponding with her husband.
Yeah, exactly.
40,000
yeah, sure.
emails to her husband.
Sure.
Well, this has been very interesting. Well, now let's get to the fun part.
All right.
Because there is talk that you are thinking about a run for the U.S. Congress. And this is because, correct me if I'm wrong, Congressman Chris Gibson is not going to be seeking another congressional term.
That is I'd say correct on both counts. Chris is a good friend of mine. I tried to talk him into running again. I said, please run again. But, you know, Chris is very determined and very clear on what his goals are and his mission is. So he has decided he's not going to run again. There's no talking him out of that. So I said, well, if you're really not going to run again, then I'm going to give it serious consideration, which sounds like political speak, but it's not. It's obviously a big step for me to consider. But I am definitely thinking about it, and I would say very strongly leaning in that direction at this point. I haven't made a full decision yet. There's so much that goes into it, and the distressing part is the amount of money that you have to raise, and,
right.
And it's so unfortunate, but that sadly is the reality that we live in. I wish it wasn't so. I wish you could go out there and be who you are and get elected, but I've said many times you could be George Washington, and if you don't have enough money to get your message out nowadays, you're going to have a difficult time winning.
Well, I mean, I would think the GOP would get behind you with funds.
Well, I hope.
You know, now, just a little aside, my friend Pete Lopez,
right.
Assemblyman Pete Lopez, is also thinking about this.
Correct, yeah.
So how does this all get worked out amongst...
Well, yeah, and also John Faso is thinking about it.
That I actually didn't know that.
Yeah, so it gets worked out in one of one of two ways. Either there's a primary or there isn't. That's about all that the issues are. Either there's one candidate or there's two, possibly three, and we have a primary. Now, I'll be honest, I feel very good about it in a primary because I'm pretty vocal. I'm out there. People know who I am. They know what I stand for. They know I'm not suffering fools gladly, and I take no prisoners. So I feel good in a primary. I would prefer not to have one, as I'm sure Pete Lopez and John Faso would prefer not to have one if they move forward. So it's a little bit early. It's not too early to start planning and thinking about it, but it's a little bit early to to fully launch a candidacy, and it's certainly too early to tell whether there will be a primary or not. So
yeah.
I think a lot of it depends on public support, institutional support, and the climate that's out there. So,
well, I could tell you as an internet activist that you certainly have the biggest buzz out there as far as succeeding Chris Gibson.
Well, that's nice
to
hear.
I'm certain of that.
Nice to hear. But they're both, nothing against Pete or John. They're both people. And I think ultimately it'll come down to a lot of party chairmen in different counties making the decision about who the candidate's going to be. But even that being said, that doesn't necessarily stop a primary from happening because somebody could not get endorsed, but they're a Republican. They say, well, I'm running a primary anyway. So we will see. I guess stay tuned. I don't want to sound like Preparara, but stay tuned. We'll see. But I am very, very serious about it. It would be an immense honor to be able to go to Congress.
I would love to see you there in Washington. God knows they need people there with values who are willing to stick to their guns on important issues. I don't mean that as a pun, but
no. Well, it's true, and I think that is 100% what this country is craving right now is honesty and directness. And I get
be people, who you are.
Be who you
don't
are.
Don't suck up to the media. Don't compromise to get 10 extra votes.
Right.
You know,
and I get a lot of folks that will tell me, you know what, Steve, I don't even agree with you all the time, but I know where you stand. I know you're telling me the truth, and I know you're acting in a heartfelt manner. So I think you can earn a lot of votes just by being completely honest and truthful with people, even if they don't completely agree with you. I know I've done that in the past. I voted for folks that I don't agree with all the time, but I know they're telling me the truth.
And, you know, conservatives just took charge of the British Parliament.
Right.
And you know how they did it? They did it by being willing to actually talk like conservatives.
Right.
To be who they are. Say, okay, you're either going to go with it or not.
Right.
But once you start trying to be everything to everyone, that dilutes your support, in my opinion. But, well, I wish you luck. Thanks for being here the third or fourth time. And you've been listening to an interview with New York State Assemblyman Steve McLaughlin on WGXC 90.7 FM. And in just a moment, we're going to throw a few switches and we're going to get back to my live voice in Studio A. So thanks for listening, folks. And Steve, thank you very much for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you.